morning. My name is Debbie, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Ebola conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, and I will now turn the call over to Mr. Bill Chartcraft. Sir, you may now begin your call.
All right, thank you, Debbie. Good morning and welcome, everyone. This is the second statewide teleconference for healthcare providers regarding Ebola preparedness and response. My name is Bill Chartcraft with the Department of Health, and I will be facilitating today's conference. You will hear presentations today from the Department of Health as well as from Sanford USC Medical Center, which has been designated as the Ebola Receiving and Treatment Facility for South Dakota. Slides for today's conference are available on the DOH website and can be found at doh.sd.gov. Once you get to that page, select A to Z topics on the top menu bar and proceed to the Ebola page. About halfway down that page, look under South Dakota Department of Health Resources, and the link to the slides is there, and it's titled Slide Set for 12-3-2014 Healthcare Conference Call. Just a reminder, as Debbie indicated, all lines are listen only until we enter the question and answer session, and Debbie will instruct us again how to activate your line and submit a question. Today's conference is scheduled for 1 hour. We have a full agenda and want to leave plenty of time for questions, so we'll get started right away. Secretary Hollingsworth, go ahead, please.
Good morning. This is Donnie Hollingsworth, and want to thank you all for joining us on the phone this morning. The last time we had a statewide call, this issue was very urgent. I don't think it's quite as urgent, but it's still very important. And the Department of Health has worked hard, and we know that all of you have too, in the last few weeks, getting prepared and ready to deal with a patient who may have Ebola symptoms. I'm pleased that today we'll be able to share with you some of those preparations, some details that really fill in some of the blanks that we weren't able to share with you at the last call. I think the most important thing to stress for everyone on the phone is that all healthcare facilities in South Dakota, whether they're designated as a treatment center or not, need to continue to think Ebola and assess all patients with Ebola-like symptoms for relevant travel history and exposure to people who have been sick with Ebola. So with that, thanks again for joining us, and we'll move to the next item on the agenda.
Good morning. Good morning from Pierre. This is Lon Keitlinger, and I'm the state epidemiologist, and I'm on slide 2. For those of you who have downloaded the slide or are just watching them on your screen. First of all, I'll give a quick background reminder that the Ebola virus is an RNA enveloped filovirus, and the Ebola disease was first described in 1976 and has caused numerous small localized outbreaks since that year. But we're now experiencing the biggest and the most historic and the most complex of all the Ebola outbreaks that we've had in the past 40 years or so. Before this outbreak, all of the smaller outbreaks had been within 5 degrees of the equator, but this one is different. It's further north, almost 15 degrees north of the equator, and it's in urban settings, and it's also being spread very sporadically to European and the United States. The current outbreak started about a year ago when a 2-year-old child died on the 6th of November 2013 in Guinea. It wasn't immediately recognized as Ebola, but it was in March of this year, and by that time Ebola had spread far and wide. In subsequent months, much has been written and reported about Ebola. So I hope you're all educating yourself, because with our increased knowledge comes increased professional comfort and decreased fear. So So the transmission of Ebola is with direct contact with blood and body fluids from a person who is sick, currently sick with Ebola. The acute onset is typically 8 to 10 days following the exposure to the blood or body fluid, but the range can be as short as 2 days or as historically long as 21 days. Keep in mind that 21 days is the monitoring period that we watch people for onset of symptoms. The symptoms and signs include fever, chills, myalgia, malaise, anorexia. Then after about 5 days, the GI symptoms start with nausea, vomiting, watery diarrhea, abdominal pain. And these symptoms progress on to shock, multi-organ failure, and hemorrhagic disease. But hemorrhagic disease is not seen in all of the patients or even most of them. Hemorrhagic symptoms are only found in about 18% of cases. If the case is non-fatal, the person typically improves about 6 to 11 days after the symptom onset. Fatal disease is associated with more severe symptoms in the early part. In some parts of rural Africa, the case fatality rates have been 70%. But in the current outbreak, where many resources are being mobilized, they're actually less than 40%. Intensive care, and especially intravenous and electrolyte management, does increase the survival rate. There is no vaccine yet for Ebola. Let's move to the next slide, and I'd be on slide 3. And this slide is from the CDC website, and it pictorially summarizes what we really need to know about Ebola. So just look at the pictures there. It's not airborne. You can give people hugs and shake hands. Ebola is killed by bleach. Pets don't carry Ebola. Not spread by mosquitoes. You can do travel. Food products imported from Africa do not transmit Ebola. And then on the lower right-hand side, very important for South Dakota, if you're sick, think influenza, not Ebola. In other words, calm down. And this is a good reminder because we're now on the cusp of our annual influenza outbreak. We've already had people in South Dakota hospitalized with influenza this season. So get your flu shot if you haven't already done so. Next slide. I'm on slide 4 now. The update here is we have 4 countries with active Ebola transmission, and they are Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Mali. I have the numbers there of cases, lab-confirmed cases, and deaths by country. And I just made this slide yesterday, but it's already outdated. CDC has updated the numbers on their website, bringing us to over 17,000 cases reported and just over 6,000 deaths, which is about a 35% case fatality rate. Other countries that have been associated with this epidemic include Senegal, which had 1 case and is now declared Ebola-free, Nigeria, which had 20 cases and 8 deaths, is now Ebola-free. Those two countries are especially remarkable since they mobilized their public health and medical infrastructure and were able to track down all the contacts and control the disease there in Africa, which bodes well for us in South Dakota because our medical and public health infrastructures are much more robust than they are in Africa. Spain has had a case, and the United States so far, we've had 4 onsets here in the United States. 2 were individuals with West African exposures. The fellow in Dallas, Texas, who I'm sure you all remember, and then the physician in New York City. The gentleman in Dallas died, the only death in the United States. And then we've had 2 onsets here in the homeland, and those are the nurses in Dallas. And the nurses and the New York physician are now cured, disease-free. So our last onset here in the United States was on the 23rd of October, the New York City physician. And that physician was released from the hospital on November 11th. And now 21 days have passed, and just today New York City proclaimed that everybody who had taken care of their case in Bellevue Hospital has passed the 21-day mark and is Ebola-free. So we can do this. Next slide, please. We're on slide five. These are the Ebola exposure risks. And I've summarized all this in a table. On the bottom, there's a link if you care to go down and read all the details and guidelines. The full guidance is on the CDC website, but we have four levels of risk: high risk, some risk, low but not zero risk, and no risk. The cases that, or the people that we have monitored in South Dakota, have all been low risk. However, we are certainly prepared to deal with people at higher risk levels. So what happens here? People, when they come into the United States, are screened, and then they're referred to us in the Department of Health, and we're notified that they will be arriving here in South Dakota, and we pick it up from there. We find the person, we investigate, we interview them, we educate them, and we monitor these people. We again determine their risk category. We do active direct monitoring or active monitoring during the 21-day period following the last exposure, which we deem to be the day they left the country. We check temperatures and symptoms twice a day, morning and evening. We also do face-to-face visits every couple days for low-risk people. If we get people that are in the some-risk category, that rhythm will be increased. The Department of Health provides thermometers to the people we monitor, printed educational materials, iPhone, temperature log sheets, intervention order, and referral information. We do the monitoring by iPhone, FaceTime, phone, email, text, office visit, or home visit. So we think we've got all bases covered here. And during that 21-day incubation period, the low-risk person is not quarantined, and this is determined on a case-by-case situation. We do monitor travel, and if a person travels to another state, we notify the other state, and they likewise notify us. Our red bell alert thresholds are a temperature of 104 degrees or 38 degrees Celsius, and then symptoms, which I mentioned previously, fever, diarrhea, vomiting, pain, or bleeding. Next slide, please. And I am on slide six. And this is a globe, and it just pictorially shows risk monitoring, how we're doing it here. We have four layers of screening. The first layer is when people depart from West Africa. CDC has assisted with that screening for everybody leaving. And the flights are now being routed through Brussels. So during the Brussels-Belgium transit time, there's another screening. And then number three is in the U.S. airports. The five U.S. airports are JFK Airport in New York City, Newark Airport right across the Hudson River from New York City, Chicago, Dulles by Washington, D.C., and in Atlanta, Georgia. And then fourth and finally, they arrive in South Dakota, where we pick up the baton with our 21-day monitoring. So far, South Dakota has had no cases. Nobody has been tested for Ebola. On the bottom I have of that slide, I have a summary of our travelers who have been monitored. All have been low risk. All have been very cooperative. All have been very healthy. And all have successfully finished their monitoring period. Amongst our neighboring states, North Dakota has been or is monitoring 11 people, Iowa 17, and Minnesota 140. Some of the bigger states like New York has been monitoring hundreds of cases, and so we feel we're getting off fairly easy with that. But even though we're not monitoring anybody at the moment, we're ready, able, and willing to receive and monitor any new arrivals. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Dr. Keitlinger. Next on the agenda is Colleen Winter, and she's going to discuss identify, isolate, inform, and hold.
Good morning. We should be on a slide that, as Bill mentioned, says identify, isolate, inform, hold, and the graphic on the side says, could it be Ebola? Early recognition and reporting of suspected Ebola virus is critical to controlling the spread of the disease. The next few slides will provide guidelines for assessing and triaging patients, specifically in ambulatory care and emergency settings. I've included the link to the tools, you will see on my slides for you to print and distribute as you see appropriate. Every clinic and hospital in the state needs to be prepared to identify a possible case based on travel history and symptoms, appropriately isolate the individual, and contact the South Dakota Department of Health for next steps. We're aware that many of you have already been screening, drilling, and working hard to be prepared to handle and care for such patients. Since our earlier webinar, much planning has been done with our healthcare leaders across the state. And as you can see, our South Dakota plan now also includes to hold patients. We'll talk more about that throughout this call, but it's critical that any healthcare facility across the state, including clinics, emergency rooms, ambulatory care facilities, be prepared to hold a suspect patient in their facility for 4 to 6 hours to allow time to contact the Department of Health for consultation, notify Sanford Medical Center, who's the receiving center, and then to allow us to safely arrange for transportation. Next slide, please. This slide says, is it flu or Ebola? And this is just to reemphasize some of Dr. Keitlinger's message earlier. We're just beginning this year's flu season. An increase in febrile patients presenting in your facility is very common during this time of year. The attached infographic is an excellent tool from CDC that you could utilize in your setting and in your communities to minimize anxiety during a time of year when we see many flu-like illnesses and symptoms, and help the public to understand the difference. Is it flu or Ebola? This tool provides a visual of the differences and is a good reminder that although anyone can get the flu, people at risk of getting Ebola are people with a travel history and those who have a direct contact with a person sick with Ebola. Our next slide provides a reminder for the healthcare settings to implement the protocols to 1, identify, 2, isolate, 3, inform, and 4, hold patients in your setting. Next slide, please. It says, ask about Ebola. The poster on this page can be downloaded from the Department of Health website for use in your clinics to post as a reminder to your staff to ask, isolate, and contact the Department of Health. Specific contact information is included on this page, on this little poster. At this point, it's important to assure your staff are trained to assess everyone who presents and every time they present. Step 1, identify exposure history. Has a patient lived in or traveled to a country with widespread Ebola transmission or had contact with an individual with confirmed Ebola within the last 21 days? Dr. Keitlinger mentioned the countries earlier, and as you can see, Mali has been added to the list. Step 2, identify signs and symptoms. Again, fever 100.5 or 38 degrees, 100.4 Fahrenheit or 38 degrees centigrade, or the symptoms that are outlined on the slide. The next two slides are CDC's algorithms for use in emergency departments and ambulatory care settings. In both of these situations, the first steps are identical. Screen for travel and direct exposure history and identify symptoms. Next slide. Ambulatory care evaluation. In beginning your assessment, the first two steps are the same for both emergency rooms and ambulatory care. Assess travel, exposure history, and symptoms. If the answer is no to travel history, the guidelines are to continue with the normal, usual triage and assessment of your patient. If the patient has a travel history but no signs and symptoms, the protocol from CDC directs you to notify the Department of Health that patient is seeking care at your facility. Continue with triage, assessment, and care, and the Department of Health will arrange to monitor that patient. If upon assessment the patient has a history of travel to affected countries or contact with an individual with confirmed Ebola disease, within the past 21 days and compatible Ebola symptoms, isolate immediately per number 3 on the algorithm and avoid unnecessary direct contact, which means a private room and access to a private bathroom or a covered commode in that room. I have included a link on this slide to the algorithm. It's a little bit difficult to see on your PowerPoint slide, but you can access that algorithm for use in your facility via the website. The healthcare worker should, at a minimum, wear a face shield and surgical face mask, impermeable gown, and 2 pairs of gloves. But always remember, if a patient's condition changes, reevaluate the PPE. Expect that during this time, step 4, informing the Department of Health and health facility leaders, will likely be happening simultaneously with your isolation preparation. We'll talk about what happens once the Department of Health is notified shortly. We also want to remind you that although this slide says not to transfer without first notifying the Department of Health, we want to emphasize throughout any of these scenarios, if a medical condition or situation warrants emergency transport, such as a heart attack, utilize your normal EMS procedures, but be sure to inform your EMS this is a suspect Ebola virus disease patient so that they can take necessary PPE precautions. The next slide is the emergency department evaluation protocol, which is very similar to the ambulatory care. The screening is identical. If the patient has a travel history and symptoms, isolate and determine use of PPE based on the clinical status. And again, at a minimum, that would be a face shield, surgical face mask, gown, and 2 pairs of gloves. Again, simultaneously, we would expect that you would be informing your local contacts for your local protocol in the Department of Health. This algorithm breaks down the use of PPE for clinically stable patients on the bottom left-hand side and PPE designated for the care of hospitalized patients, and you can review that at your convenience. Again, evaluate PPE based on the patient's condition. The next slide, which just says isolate, really summarizes what we've just covered. In summary, if a patient has symptoms, travel, and exposure history, place the patient in a private room or separate enclosed area and provide a private bathroom or covered bedside commode. Avoid unnecessary contact. Only essential personnel with designated roles should evaluate the patient and provide care. CDC recommendations for infection prevention and control for hospitalized patients with Ebola in the United States also recommend maintaining a log of the persons that would be entering this room and to consider posting personnel at the patient's door to ensure appropriate and consistent PPE by all persons entering the room. The next slide says to inform. The contact numbers you see on the left side of this slide are all included on the poster on the right-hand side, which can be accessed on our website. Per your local protocol, notify your local leadership per your established emergency protocol, and then immediately call the Department of Health. There are 3 numbers listed there to use. The one is our 1-800 number, followed by a number that can reach us after hours, and as a backup, facilities can call the state duty officer. The Department of Health will immediately assemble our team to assist with the suspect case. This includes coordinating with CDC, coordinating transport of the patient if needed, getting appropriate testing and case finding. And finally, hold. Facilities should plan to isolate and provide basic care for a patient for 4 to 6 hours. This 4 to 6 hours is an estimate of the time a patient may need to remain in the setting. The designated EMS will be activated. They need to prepare and drape their ambulance and travel to the clinic. The time frame is clearly based on the location of the patient and clinic and the time it takes for the emergency service to travel to the facility. And Bill will provide additional information regarding designated EMS. Again, a reminder that if the medical situation warrants emergency transport, use your normal EMS. The CDC website continues to provide updates to this information and protocols. Visit your website frequently. The Department of Health is also posting information and tools on our website, which may be of use to you. Angela will be providing additional information regarding the use of PPE.
All right, thank you, Colleen. Next, as Colleen mentioned, Angela Jackley with the Department of Health will be discussing personal protective equipment for Ebola.
So it's important to remember that while we had a lot of fluidity in the beginning of the PPE, we haven't had any changes in the guidance to PPE since October 20th. However, it's still very important to continue to practice and to drill, to work with your staff, and to ensure that you're applying all of the guidance offered by the CDC, focusing on the specific PPE for healthcare workers. They have identified the three key principles that the healthcare workers at Emory, Nebraska, and NIH have followed successfully. None of these workers at those facilities have contracted Ebola. So we should be on the slide that says key principles. The three key principles, really, to working with Ebola patients. It's important that all healthcare workers involved in the care of Ebola patients must have received repeated training and have demonstrated competency in performing all Ebola-related infection control practices and procedures, and specifically in donning and doffing the proper PPE. And we have created a donning and doffing checklists that are available for all the PPE combinations. You can find those on our South Dakota Department of Health Ebola webpage. While working in your PPE, healthcare workers caring for Ebola patients should have no skin exposed. The overall safe care of patients in a facility must be overseen by an on-site manager at all times, and each step of every PPE donning and doffing procedure must be supervised by a trained observer to ensure proper completion of the established PPE protocol. Slide two. The first key principle is rigorous and repeated training. It is a critical aspect to ensuring infection control. Ensure that each healthcare worker follows step-by-step processes outlined in the guidance on PPE. Use trained observers to monitor for correct PPE use and adherence to protocols for donning and doffing PPE. Guide the healthcare workers at each point of use during using a checklist for every donning and doffing procedure. The sequence of actions involved in each donning and doffing step are critical to avoiding the exposure. The trained observer should read aloud to the healthcare worker each step in the procedure checklist and visually confirm and document that the step has been completed correctly. The trained observer will be knowledgeable about all PPE recommended in that facility's protocol and the correct donning and doffing procedures, including even the disposal of the used PPE, and they will be qualified to provide guidance and technique recommendations to the healthcare worker. Document the training of both the observers and the healthcare worker for proficiency and competency. And the trained observer should not participate in any Ebola patient care activities. So the slide entitled PPE to prevent skin exposure. Principle number two is no skin exposure when PPE is worn. Goggles are no longer recommended as they may not provide complete skin coverage. They may not be disposable and they may fog after extended use. To ensure skin is not exposed, healthcare workers should double glove. The outer glove should have an extended cuff. Boot covers that are waterproof and go to at least mid-calf or leg covers should be worn. Use single-use, fluid-resistant, or impermeable gowns that extend to at least mid-calf or coverall without an integrated hood. Next slide. Use respirators, including either an N95 or higher, or a powered air purifying respirator. Use a surgical hood to ensure coverage of the head and neck and a full face shield. A fluid-resistant or impermeable apron covering the torso to the mid-calf should be used if the Ebola patients have vomiting or diarrhea. Next slide. Principle number three is having a trained monitor present during donning and doffing procedures. The sequence of actions involved in each donning and doffing step are critical to avoid the exposure. The trained observer should read aloud to the healthcare worker each step in the procedure checklist and visually confirm and document. The observer should be available during the donning and doffing to ensure that the protocol is followed, as well as to assess for visible contamination, cuts, or tears. The next slide. CDC has provided a section outlining several PPE combinations that allow for a facility to select the PPE for their protocol based on availability, familiarity, comfort, and preference, while continuing to provide a standardized high level of protection for the healthcare personnel and how they should be correctly worn. A brief overview of the recommendations include use of a powered air purifying respirator or an N95 or higher respirator in the event of an unexpected aerosol generating procedure. Both options provide equivalent protection if they're worn, put on, and removed correctly. The facility should select and standardize the PPE to be used throughout the facility by all essential healthcare workers and provide a written protocol outlining the procedures for donning and doffing. Please refer to the CDC's procedures for PPE guidance for detailed PPE recommendations and the steps for donning and doffing, which also includes videos for each PPE selection. This guidance includes both PPE for the healthcare worker caring for the Ebola patient as well as the recommended PPE for the trained observer. It also discusses standardizing the attire under the PPE, designating areas for putting on and taking off the PPE, having the trained observer available and ready, step-by-step PPE removal, as well as disinfection of gloved hands. The next slide. So Colleen touched upon the guidance issued in October, which provides an algorithm for emergency department evaluation and management of patients who present with Ebola virus disease. The guidance addresses PPE in the ER and reiterates that to minimize transmission risk, only essential healthcare workers with designated roles should provide patient care. The PPE should be determined based upon the patient's clinical status. For a clinically stable patient, use a face shield and surgical face mask, impermeable gown, and two pairs of gloves. If the patient is exhibiting obvious bleeding, vomiting, copious amounts of diarrhea, or a clinical condition that warrants an invasive or emergency aerosol-generating procedure, such as intubation, suctioning, or active resuscitation, refer to the PPE designated for the care of hospitals, including procedures for donning and doffing, which this discussion covers. Next slide. Facilities should ensure that the space and the layout allow for clear separation between clean and potentially contaminated areas. It is critical that physical barriers be used where necessary, along with visual signage to separate areas and ensure a one-way flow of care. Designate clean versus potentially contaminated areas. Remind your healthcare workers to wait for the trained observer before donning and doffing. Reinforce the need for slow and deliberate removal of PPE to prevent self-contamination. And remind healthcare workers to perform disinfection of gloved hands in between steps of the doffing procedure. Next slide. PPE storage and donning areas should be outside of the Ebola patient room. Do not store potentially contaminated equipment, used PPE, or waste removed from the patient's room. Donning activities must be directly observed by a trained observer. Next slide. The PPE removal area should be in close proximity to the patient room and separate from the clean area. If the facility must use the hallway outside the patient's room as the PPE removal area, construct physical barriers to close the hallway to through traffic and thereby create an anteroom. The facility should ensure that the hallway space complies with fire codes. Ensure the appropriate supplies are available, which includes two chairs, leak-proof infectious waste containers, gloves, EPA-registered disinfectant wipes, and alcohol-based hand rubs. Restrict access to this hallway to properly trained essential personnel, and facilities should consider making showers available for healthcare workers.
All right, thank you, Angela. Next on the agenda is EMS transport, and I'm going to briefly discuss that. Early in our preparations to respond to Ebola, we asked the Office of Emergency Medical Services to identify two advanced EMS services that were willing to receive advanced training and equipment in order to be the designated EMS transport services for confirmed suspect Ebola virus disease patients in South Dakota. Two services that stepped forward were Rural Metro EMS in Sioux Falls and the Rapid City Fire Department EMS. Since that time, 6 to 10 providers in each of those services have received advanced training on how to safely transport EVD patients. In addition, they have received advanced personal protective equipment to ensure that they can protect themselves during what may be a long transport across the state. They also received training on how to protect their ambulance by properly draping the inside of the ambulance to protect it from contamination. Training included procedures for both a dry patient and for a wet patient. When a suspect EVD patient is identified and their travel to an Ebola transmission area is confirmed, the Department of Health will contact Rural Metro or Rapid City Fire and coordinate transportation from the initial receiving facility to Sanford USD Medical Center. There they will undergo initial testing and treatment. In the unlikely event a suspect EVD patient requires transport by another EMS provider in South Dakota, we have also supplied a basic level of personal protective equipment to every other EMS service in the state. Additional training is also being provided to them through their monthly refresher training program. Dr. Weirda Suttle will now discuss the process of receiving and treating suspect EVD patients at Sanford USD Medical Center. Operator, can you open Dr. Suttle's line? Debbie, are you with us? Dr. Suttle, are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Please proceed.
Great. Thank you. Just to let you know, our philosophy along the way as we've been making decisions as a health center to take care of Ebola and to prepare for an Ebola patient, our philosophy has always been to look to the disease and the science behind the virus to guide our decisions that we've made. We activated Silent Incident Command the second week of October, and that's given us structure and established accountabilities and responsibilities to be able to continue with our preparations. And I would say that with each decision that's been made, either within our own organization or external decisions by the Department of Health, by the federal government, we've developed clarity, process design, and been able to establish different responsibilities along the entire access of a care for a possible Ebola patient. Those would include designating an EMS and training that EMS services, monitoring travelers, designating a hospital, and coming up with the lab process. All of these have given us clarity as we think about and contemplate taking care of any Ebola patients. We are currently actively working on training, practicing, and educating our specialized teams that continued practice of donning and doffing and working with a patient while in the protective gear is critically important. We are continuing to learn from the University of Nebraska Medical Center, Emory, and the CDC to refine and improve upon our processes. We are anticipating a CDC site visit and continue to work through their checklist. And we are in the process of establishing drills to do with EMS and the Department of Health and other South Dakota health systems to practice transporting, identifying and isolating a patient, transporting a patient all the way through the system. So when the Department of Health contacts us, when a patient is identified in your organization and they contact us, that will immediately activate us where an infection prevention and control specialist, an infectious disease physician, and the administrator on call will all conference call in with the Department of Health and with your facility. In addition, our infectious disease physician will do a direct consultation with a physician at your facility to discuss that patient and their care needs so we can do a safe transfer of that patient from your facility to ours. We have two locations for the possible arrival of the patient to Sanford. One is a room that we've got specifically designed in our emergency department, and another is the actual isolation unit, which is in one of our critical care wings of our hospital. The ideal situation would be the patient would go from the EMS transport into our isolation unit, bypassing the emergency department. Depending on the criticalness of the patient, and the availability of the room in our isolation unit, the patient may need to go to the emergency department first. And this is kind of factors into that potential 4 to 6 hours of holding that patient while EMS is activated, their ambulance is equipped and ready, and then the patient actually transports from your facility to ours. The initial lab test for Ebola virus disease will occur at our facility, and the test 72 hours later will also occur at our facility if the first test is negative. And I would tell you the most likely scenario, or the most hopeful scenario, would be that a traveler who develops symptoms would call the Department of Health first from their home, and then that patient would be transferred from their home via the designated EMS to our facility. These possible travelers will get sick with other illnesses, so we need to identify these patients wherever they present throughout the state and all work together. So know that when you call the Department of Health, they will contact us immediately, and then we will all be working together to determine best routes of care for this patient. And that's all I've got. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Dr. Suttle. The last item on our agenda today is a laboratory update, and Joan Adam with the Department of Health will provide that.
Good morning. The Public Health Laboratory is making preparations to implement the BioFire film array technology, and we plan to have the instrument in place and operational by December 19th. In the meantime, our agreement with the University of Nebraska Medical Center at Omaha remains in place, and should we have any suspect cases and testing that needs to be conducted, those samples will be handled by the University of Nebraska. That's all I have at this point, Bill. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Joan. Debbie, if you would, please, we're ready for questions and answers, so if you remind folks how to submit a question, please do that.
Okay, at this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster.
Well, Debbie's soliciting those questions, I just want to call your attention to a few things. If there are any individuals in your organization that who were unable to participate today, a recording of today's conference will be posted later today next to the slides on our DOH website. And also, if you are unable to submit your question in person today, we would be happy to answer those questions through our DOH email box. And you can submit those questions, and here is the address. It's doh.info, so doh.info@state.sd.us. Debbie, do we have any questions yet?
Yes, sir. Your first question comes from Ladine Walford.
Good morning. What I'm really concerned about is that last week I spent 4 hours on the telephone speaking with everyone from Mr. Jim Wendt with DENR to medical waste contractors trying to figure out what we would do with Ebola medical waste, and I'm not finding anything anywhere near here where we can contract. Does anybody have any clues on what we're going to do with this?
Yeah, was it Ladine or Lajean?
It's Ladine Morford at Lower Brule Health Center.
Okay. Thanks for that question, Ladine. That question or that answer has been evolving from the start, but I think it has settled in a little bit. The way it works is that there's a special permit that's issued by the U.S. Department of Transportation, and it's specific to the facility that is generating the Ebola waste and to a hauler that is contracting to remove that waste and treat it. And as I understand, there's only one company that is interested in doing that in South Dakota, and that is Stericycle. And again, it wouldn't be issued until there is an actual case or a known suspect with Ebola virus disease. So thank you for that question. Next question, Debbie.
Your next question comes from John Walker.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Tell me, please. I'm with the Argus Leader, by the way. I shouldn't say by the way. How much is this costing the state in terms of equipment and training, possible ambulance transfer? Is it $500,000, more than $1 million? Is it multiple millions? And then number two, related to that, where does that money come from, please?
Yeah, John, this call is not the forum for that. We'd be happy to visit with you after the call, but this is for healthcare providers, and we're going to stick to that. So next question, please.
Your next question comes from June Volk.
Go ahead, June.
June, your line is open.
Bill, this is June, and I was also still wondering whether, because we're so close to the North Dakota border, whether we could transport our patients to Sanford in Bismarck, and how we might go about that if that was, I haven't contacted them to see anything about them accepting our care, but I thought I would start with South Dakota Department of Health first.
Yeah, excellent question, June, and we have been working with North Dakota and with other states, and I think it would all come down to a consultation with CDC, with the facility, and with the affected states as to where the most appropriate place would be to transport that patient. I think right now, until we know for sure that North Dakota facility up and ready to go, we would still lean towards transporting to the USD Medical Center in Sioux Falls. But down the road, that's not to say Bismarck might be a closer facility, but I think it just comes down to a consultation at the time of the encounter.
Thank you.
Next question.
If anyone else would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment. Sir, your next question comes from Greg Walsh.
Hi, Bill. I can't thank you guys enough for putting this conference call on for all of our providers and things. It's very valuable information. I just had one question. Do you have the specific contact information for the EMS services, phone numbers, websites, things of that nature?
Yes. Greg, this is Bill, and the way that we plan to activate those providers is through the health department. So,
okay.
So really, the only numbers that they would need would be the three numbers that Colleen gave and that are on that graphic. So the
great.
For the Department of Health.
Sounds good. Very good. We'll relay that information out.
Thank you. Next question, Debbie.
There are no further questions, sir.
All right. Thank you, Debbie. Hearing no further questions, I think we're going to conclude today's call. I would just remind everybody that, we would be happy to answer those questions that you weren't able to ask today. And again, that email address is doh.info@state.sd.us. And also that a recording of today's conference will be on our website next to the slides for today's conference sometime later this afternoon. So again, thank you for participating, and we'll talk to you later.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.